supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, the garlic is harvested. It's all cured and ready to go. How do we handle it from this point forward? We know to save the biggest cloves for replanting. What do we do with the rest of this stuff? We'll tell you after lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Nancy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks.
Thank you, Nancy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
You seem to be taken by surprise by that question. Where is Nancy doing well?
I'm in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Oh, we love our Oklahoma listeners. What can we do for you, Nance?
Well, we have about 3 acres, and the 2 acres are in the back of the house, and it was once a pasture for alpacas and llamas, and it's lovely. It was mostly Bermuda, but over the last 5 years, it's gotten more natural, lots of wildflowers and beautiful grasses, and I kind of just keep it that way, no chemicals. But last year and this year, we've noticed terrible stickers creeping in. I looked them up. I think they're what's called sandburrs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very common in your region.
Yeah, oh, they're horrible, and they're spreading, and I can't seem to get rid of them. There's too many to dig up. I can't set them on fire because our property's ringed in cedar trees.
Yes. Setting your land on fire, bad idea.
Well, they're really frustrating, though. I mean, I've thought about fire, but I also have been told to kick goats for a while, and I'm not sure I can really go that way either.
Why?
Well, they might escape.
No. That's it. No, well, you actually go to the local rent-a-goat place. But you don't bring the goats home in your own pickup truck. They come out and deliver them.
Oh.
They set up little low-voltage electric fences and keep the goats in a certain area. And there's just something about goats where they eat the most troublesome weeds first. You'll contract with them for, you know, maybe a couple of weeks, maybe a month, and they'll move the fencing around. And the goats will eat.
I wonder if they have that here.
Well, you know, rent-a-goat is a very popular concept, and goats thrive all across the United States. So I would certainly look around.
Okay.
You might also have a local.
Well, maybe I will think about that. Maybe it's safer than fire.
Oh, yes. Anything is safer than fire.
Well, I like it. Fire's good. So you really think goats? And then do I have to have them back next season so the seeds that turn into plants also get eaten? Or,
you know, that's one of the great things about this weed, even though it seems so tenacious. And I should explain to our listeners that this is the weed that gets kind of tall, and then the seed pods have stickers on them, and they get stuck to your clothing, your dog's fur.
Oh, yes, terribly.
But they are an annual plant. They completely die off over winter and are repopulated by their own seed that they dropped in the fall, and that seed comes back out in the form of young plants in the spring, exactly like crabgrass.
Oh, okay.
You would get the goats early. They would eat the sandbur weeds before they can set seed. And then, theoretically, the only thing you would have to worry about is any dormant seed that didn't sprout the first year. Sometimes these plants have a built-in survival mechanism where some of the seed holds back and waits till the second or third year. But now you could go out in the spring with a little handheld propane flame weeder, and now that you know what the plants look like, you could just torch those little plants. And again, the idea is to stop the plants anytime from the first sprouts coming up in the spring to around late June before there's a possibility of them setting seed. So if you torch them at flowering time, that's still good because the seeds can't form until the flowers are off. Anything you do to improve the soil will also help. These are plants that love to live in a sandy, low-nutrient soil.
That's
Having the goats would do double duty. Not only would the goats eat the plants for that year, but they would put goat poop down on the ground, which would add to the nutrient content of your soil. So the goats in many ways are the perfect solution to this problem. Otherwise, you would just try to find a good quality source of compost, spread some compost on the soil every year at some point, be out there with a flame weeder, look for those flowers, look for the young plants, just torch them, don't set the whole field on fire. And they're actually fairly easy to control once you realize that they die off in the winter and have to regrow from seed in the spring.
So it'd be too late to get goats now because their stickers are green on the stems, but they're not dried and falling off yet.
Now would be actually a good time to go out and toast them. You would kill a lot of the seed. And you can buy what I'm calling a flame weeder. You can buy them online for like $60. They're just a small shepherd's hook. You attach a camp stove size bottle of propane to. It's got an automatic igniter. And the only thing you'd be torching is the seed pods. And you'll have a good time because the seed pods will explode like little fireworks.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fun.
You pyromaniac.
Okay. So maybe flame them out a little now and then get goats in the spring?
That would be absolutely perfect. But you're just flaming the seed pods. Now, we're not giving you permission to set the world on fire.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, if you hear about it, it wasn't me.
Okay. All right. Good luck, Nance.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your help today.
Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
We are in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Very good. Very good. What can we do for Michael in Allentown?
Well, I heard that you talk a lot about grapes, and among other things, of course. But I think one of the shows, my sister heard you talking about the canopy and how it's important to have airflow through it. And it would be interesting. I've read so many things, and this is my first year actually trying to harvest grapes.
Okay.
And I have a lot of them on my vine. I only have two vines. They're about 6 years old. They're actually five-year-old transplants. And we've had them for a little over a year now, And I train them in a way that isn't really – I've never seen them trained this way, only because I guess I wasn't going for grapes. I was going more for the leaves.
Right. Good idea.
We stuff the leaves and we eat those. But the grapes have flourished, and we have, you know, at least 300 bunches of grapes.
Right, clusters.
In a pretty small – clusters, right. And, I mean, they're not the full things that you see in the magazines or in the vineyards or anything. But long story short, we have a pretty huge canopy. It's about 20 feet long, only two plants. And it's very bushy, and we cleared it out a little bit this week to try to get the airflow like you were talking about on the one show. And as I've read, but you don't really see the grapes because I'm kind of nervous now that, you know, we're a month or two out of harvest. I took a Brix reading today of about 17, and I guess my goal from what I've read is somewhere between 23 and 25.
Okay, no. Okay, slow down. Okay, mm-hmm. First of all, you want to, especially if you're using the grape leaves, you want to be harvesting those from like a month after they break dormancy. You know, harvesting just a few at a time in the beginning, but right. Then more and more as it goes on. You want to constantly be reducing that kind of pressure, especially in a wet year like you've had. There's been so much flooding in the Allentown area. Grapes are disease prone, so you want to be taking off more leaves this season than most. Okay. You don't have to worry about sun scald or anything. Your grapes are not going to reach the full sugar content until towards the end of the season. They're immature right now. So what you want to be doing now is actually thinning out the grape clusters. Now, you might want to be sitting down, because if you've got 300 clusters, I want you to take off 150.
Wow.
And just compost them. If you've ever been to a professional vineyard around this time of year, the ground is littered with baby grapes.
Okay.
So that's the secret. Apples, peaches, grapes, they need to be thinned for you to get the kind of full-size grapes and quality fruits and flavor. Think about the space they're taking up. Think about the biomass that you have. There isn't enough room or leaf structure to support that many clusters. So you'd wind up with 300 puny clusters or 150 full-size, full-flavor, super sweet clusters.
All right. So right now, not necessarily thinning the clusters in and of themselves, but actually removing the whole cluster, you're saying?
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
Okay.
You're pulling off entire clusters.
Wow. Okay.
I know it's hard to do. When you're growing apples or peaches, you got to pull off 3/4 of them.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
If you don't pull them off, you get nothing. It's very counterintuitive. If you do pull them off, you get very high-quality fruit. Go to any vineyard around this time of year, there'll be a mulch of baby grapes on the ground.
Wow, okay. So I want to look at the ones that don't look as nice, obviously, as the nicer ones, and or just kind of space them out, more the placement of them more than what they look like right now.
I would go for looks first, but placement should also be an issue.
Okay.
Especially if you see any signs of disease or damage, they come off first.
Okay.
But don't throw them on the ground or you'll attract yellow jackets and
other nuisance
insects like mad. You just compost them.
Excellent. Hey, thanks so much for taking my call.
All right. Thank you for making it and good luck. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will speak about the importance of luring bug-eating birds to your garden beds at the American Birding Expo in Oaks, PA on Saturday, September 22nd. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to have fun with garlic and take more of your fun-filled phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Coming up later in the show, we celebrate my favorite time of year. The garlic harvest is in. I got lots of great looking bulbs, and now we get to separate it all out, save some for planting, and make garlic powder with the rest. And this year, we have a special twist on how to keep that powder fresh and dry throughout next year. In the meantime, lots of your fresh and dry phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Debbie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Debbie. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Me too. Ducky. Maybe more seagully. I'm on the Jersey Shore.
Where is Debbie?
I'm in Ventnor, New Jersey.
All right. What can we do for Debbie in Ventnor?
Well, this is a little unusual. I've been working in Kenya for 25 years, and about 4 years ago, I opened a high school for girls that are at risk of being married off.
Oh, okay. That's, first of all, just thank you so much for doing that work. It's vitally important. Before I started writing professionally about gardening, I did write about poverty and famine in the third world and the problems.
Really?
Oh, yeah, of women. So,
wow.
And how women do most of the work and, you know, can't own property and all that kind of stuff. So it's very important work that you're doing. Thank you. All right. What can I do to help you?
Well, so I'm working with Maasai and they're pastoral. So they can't grow anything in their home regions until you find some way to help them do that.
Right.
So right now I'm trying to teach food security. So we have 100 girls at our high school in Kajiado, Kenya. We have greenhouses and drip irrigation.
Excellent.
And we're trying to teach the best farming practices and helping them to take it to their home regions where it works.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we haven't been able to grow any root vegetables. Our soil is very clay, and our carrots just die. Our onions are not very happy. And I'm looking at doing raised beds in addition to our greenhouses and drip.
I'm going to stop you right there. I first joined Rodale Press in 1984 as a health writer. My writing attracted the eye of Robert Rodale, who was the editor of Organic Gardening and Prevention magazines and ran Rodale Press. Bob had spent a lot of time in the third world and learned to just spend all of his time with the indigenous people, learning their practices and trying to help them understand what had been lost the kind of farming and gardening practices that had been wiped out by people who were trying to teach them to grow American crops the American way. And this was during a time of great famine, especially in the Sudan. And he hired me to co-write a book with him, and I want you to get the book. It is called Save Three Lives. My basic thing is try not to go too American. You will have the most success if you adapt to their conditions, because they're not New Jersey. You know that. Rain is scarce. When it comes in heavy waves. You know, it has to be collected, it has to be saved, and the plants have to be adapted to these conditions. And very few plants, with the exception of corn that we grow here, are really adaptable to Africa. And in Africa, they're going to grow different kinds of corn. They're going to grow what we would call dent corns, field corns, Indian corns, but they have a native African white drying corn to use to make cornmeal and things like that.
We do, and we have, they're called pasho mills.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we stress the plants that are already going to survive there without a lot of help, because what happens when you stop going back? What happens when the raised beds aren't tended anymore? These are home gardens, and they provide, even the smallest plot of land can provide almost a year's nutrition for a family of four.
Wow.
And with
so here's where we are. We have 100 girls and maybe a staff of 20
mm-hmm.
that we feed every day, and we try to grow all of our vegetables. And we're quite successful with tomatoes, cucumber,
right.
Weekies,
because as
kale.
You said, you have a greenhouse, you have drip irrigation, you have a lot of help, you have a lot of inputs. What I'm talking about is something they can go home with a couple of packs of seeds and begin feeding their families.
Oh, that would be great. We can't grow any root vegetables. We've tried sweet potatoes, white potatoes, purple potatoes.
Potatoes are Peruvian. They're not African. But yeah, I mean, if you want to have fun, you can grow beets and things in a raised bed amended with a lot of inputs. But at the end of the day, you have to give these young women something they can go home with and grow real food, real nutritious food that has some cultural heritage that's actually in their DNA, and that they can grow without your help.
Thank you.
All right, good luck. And again, thank you for the fine work you're doing. It's hugely important.
So, Mike, when are you coming to Kenya to see our project?
We'll see. But thank you for doing it. All right, you take care. Leslie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Leslie. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
And where is Leslie doing good?
In South Philly.
South Philly. Whereabouts in South Philly?
I'm about a block away from the Italian market, just a block away from Washington Ave.
What can we do for Leslie in South Philly?
I live across the street from a Philadelphia parking lot, and there are two trees that we got planted, and one of them started looking very sick this spring. It's a willow oak, and the leaves were coming out very kind of curled and stunted, and the other tree is also an oak. It looked healthy, but now those leaves are also starting to curl. So I'm trying to diagnose what the problem is. I mean, we've been watering, we've been weeding, we've got mulch.
Okay, so that's probably the problem. Who planted these trees?
The one tree that's the willow oak that seemed a little sickly, the city planted that tree.
Were you there to watch?
I watched it a little, but not closely.
Was it bald and burlapped, or was it originally in a pot?
I do not remember that one.
Okay.
I do not remember if it was a bare root tree or if it was in burlap.
If it was planted in burlap, that's why it's dying. The roots can't get outside of the bag.
I do not know.
What about the other one?
The other one was a bare root tree.
Okay.
And that was planted through our local tree tenders, and I helped plant the second tree.
Okay, Tree Tenders is a great Philadelphia organization of volunteers, and they're trying to care for street trees and increase the number of street trees in the Philadelphia area. I know them very well. So they planted them. And when were these planted? Last spring?
The willow oak was planted in the spring before last.
Okay.
The other one was planted the following fall. So the willow oak, when it was planted that year, had a lot of leaves, but it always had kind of curly leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard for me to identify what it was because the leaves were not straight and flat. They were always kind of curly.
Yeah,
but there were a lot of leaves and it looked healthy. Yeah.
There are many diseases that go by the name leaf curl and stuff, but they can be very misleading. Let's just stick to the physicality. So when the trees were originally planted, were they heavily watered?
I watered them 20 gallons of water per week was what I learned at the tree tenders, and so that's what I tried to stick to.
And how could you apply that? How did you apply that?
I live across the street, and I have a spigot, and I have a hose, and I take it across, and I water it. I don't put it in one of those Gator bags.
Good,
I just water it.
And do you stand there with a lot of water coming out, or do you turn the hose on to drip, 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 and walk away for a couple hours?
What I do now, last year I didn't have a watering system, so I would stand there and water it. Now I've rigged up a hose that I run the hose, a flat hose across the street, hook it into my handy-dandy watering system that runs all the way up and down the parking lot that has little sprinklers on it, and then I turn that on, and it drips, 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 and I walk away for like an hour.
Okay. All right. That's not the worst. It's much easier. You didn't need any special equipment. All you needed was a hose nozzle that you could set to drip like an annoying faucet and leave it drip at the base of each tree for about 4 hours once a week.
4 hours. Okay.
Yeah, because you're trying to deliver an inch of rain, but in a situation like this where there's very little soil, you got to deliver it very slowly and really saturate the soil. When you hit it with a lot of water all at once, it just runs off or it gets lost. It takes the tree 20 minutes to realize it's being watered and open up its root system appropriately.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. I am doing it only once a week, but...
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Now, what about the mulch? What's going on here?
We put in mulch when it was first planted. Then earlier in the spring, we also put another round of a little bit of mulch that we got through the Tree Tenders Association.
Mulch is a non-definitive term. What's it made of?
I don't know. We got it. It's like...
Compost, wood chips, bark, what?
It might be wood chips and compost. I mean, it's not... I don't know.
Okay, well, it's important to know. It's better to add no mulch than to add the wrong mulch. And is it touching the trunks of the trees?
No. We've kept it away from the trunk. Because I did this in conjunction with the tree tenders, and I took the tree tender course, and so I know that we're not supposed to have a lot of the mulch there. We don't have a mulch volcano.
Okay.
I'm not doing that.
Now, and when you look at the trees, do they look like lollipops coming out of the ground, or can you see the root flare above ground?
I can see the root flare.
Oh, okay. You know, it's a very harsh condition around a parking lot. A lot of reflected sunlight. The rain has been really hurtful to some plants this year. You know, so many inches of rain coming down in an hour over and over again can be very stressful. But it doesn't sound like you're doing anything completely wrong. I worry that the thing planted by the city may not have been unwrapped. I would not be using anything with any kind of wood in it. I know there's this, quote, new mulch out there that's half compost and half wood chips, but those wood chips are still stealing nitrogen from the soil, and the tree really only needs nitrogen. So I would think you could still go to Fairmount Park and still get pure compost or even composted horse manure.
I do my own compost, so would compost help?
Do you have enough fall leaves to make good quality compost?
Well, I make compost out of kitchen scraps, and I have it in one of those worm bins that stacks, and I have it.
Oh, okay, so you're not making compost, you're making worm castings.
Okay.
Yes, those are excellent.
Okay, so I could put some of those around. I was afraid to put those around the tree because I didn't know what kind of nutrients it would need and whether that would be good or
worm castings are perfect. They're what helps feed the trees in the forest. Get rid of the stuff with the wood mulch. Just scrape it away and put some worm castings down. And really, if we have a very dry spring, continue the watering. Put a rain gauge out there or use a rain gauge on your own property. If you get an inch of rain, don't do any watering. The most important time to water them correctly was as they were getting established. So we're past that period already. Feed them the worm castings. Don't let any kind of wood get near them. And other than that, if there's anything you can do to keep people from walking on the soil in between them.
Yeah, I've got a fence.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's about it. You know, don't forget they're subject to dogs and feral cats and all these fumes. And, you know, it's a tough life. But the worm castings, I think, can help.
Okay. So I'll just pray.
Yeah. Yeah. Light a candle to the Blessed Mother.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Good luck, Leslie.
Thank you. All
right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will travel down south to speak about the importance of horticultural therapy when I appear at a very special Healing Garden on Tuesday, October 23rd at the beautiful Country Club of North Carolina in Pinehurst. But don't go checking the events section of our website for all the details just yet, because we'll be right back to talk about fun with garlic and take more of your fun phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
In just a little bit, we will talk about one of my favorite topics, what to do with all that beautiful garlic you harvested last month. Now's the time to make your choices and place your bets for next year and to put away a good supply of that pungent spice for next year. We'll tell you how to do all that after a couple more of your pungent phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Chandra, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Chandra. How are you?
I am fine. I am from suburb of Philadelphia, North Wales.
North Wales, PA. Yes, very good. What can we do for you, Chandra?
I have a hydrangea bush, and it did not give flowers for a few years, and then only last year it gave me two big flowers, and then now, this year, nothing. It was bluish flower. So I don't know what's wrong with my hydrangea.
Okay. Hydrangeas are very difficult plants sometimes in our climate. For instance, the couple of years back was probably not your fault. We had an early freeze. We had a late frost. And there was like 2 years in a row recently where almost no one on the East Coast got hydrangea blooms. Last year was a good year. Unfortunately, this year is a fabulous year. All the rain we've had, and it's been mild weather at the end of last winter and the beginning of this spring. So your hydrangeas should be blooming. Now, are you pruning them?
I pruned in, after summer. I pruned it when it's winter, and then nice leaves are there. It's healthy. It's all green. But no flower.
Because you cut them all off.
No, I didn't cut it all off. I kept it like 12 to 18 inches.
Right. If you notice hydrangeas, they don't bloom all up and down the stem. They only bloom at the top of each stem. So when you trim them back by a little bit, by definition, you're cutting off the flower buds. Now, there's different types of hydrangeas. There are hydrangeas that bloom on what's called old wood. In other words, stems that were there the year before. And there are hydrangeas that supposedly bloom only on, quote, new wood, which is the shoots that come up that spring. But hydrangeas generally don't behave the way they're supposed to, and they are the plants that should not be pruned when people think they should. There are very few plants, if any, that should be pruned in the fall, for instance. People are just trying to make their garden look cleaner, but they're certainly not doing anything for the health of the plants. The plants are trying to go dormant. Fall pruning stimulates new growth, and winter sets in, and it really gives the plants a shock. You shouldn't be pruning anything really from this point in the year onward. And let's face it, a lot of times you're out there pruning because you're bored. It's still nice weather. You want to go out there. You want the garden to look nice and neat. But a lot of times you're removing next year's flowers. So you haven't done any damage this year, have you?
No, I didn't prune. It was just last year, but it never gave me flower except one year.
Yes, yes. I tried to explain. In the years previous to that, we had two really severe winters, and nobody got hydrangeas.
But in my neighborhood, they got, because we have a lot of other people have hydrangea. Everybody has blooming.
Yes, 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 yes. Last year and this were great years for hydrangeas. The two previous years, your neighbors did not have hydrangeas either. I can virtually guarantee that. So this year, and all it is you're out there pruning without knowing what you're doing. So this year, what you have to do is leave them alone.
Okay.
And in the winter, leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the late spring, when the flowers begin to appear, that's when you need the most patience. You just wait till all the flowers have nicely formed. Then you can go in and make sure you know what you're doing here. But if there are any shoots that don't have flowers on them, those shoots you can cut out. And that way it'll make it even look like you have more flowers, but you won't do any damage. If you want to see blooms every year, the only safe time to prune hydrangeas is literally when they are blooming.
Okay.
And if you make a mistake and you accidentally cut off one that's flowering, just bring it in and put it in a vase indoors. The flowers last a long time and they look very pretty inside. But, you know, you have to realize hydrangeas are not four-season plants. They don't look at all nice in the fall, in the winter, or in the spring. But it's that show throughout the summer that's why we grow them. And if you leave them alone until they start flowering next year, I guarantee you'll have as many flowers as your neighbors do.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. I wish you many flowers next year.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Kwasi, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How are you?
I am doing well, Kwasi. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Where are you?
So I'm calling from Drexel Hill in Pennsylvania.
All right. What can we do for Kwasi just outside of Philadelphia?
So I have two problems that I needed your help with. The first is with the demon squirrels, I think you said.
Evil squirrels. You're very close.
Yes. They have eaten, they ate all of the peaches off my peach tree.
Oh, yeah, they love peaches.
They've eaten and chopped down all of my corn.
Mm-hmm.
They have eaten all of my squash, all of my tomatoes. Luckily, they haven't eaten any of the beans or the eggplant.
Yeah, they've been full so far, yeah.
So I was wondering, what is the best way to deal with them?
Do you have anything protecting your garden?
I have chicken wire, but they seem to know how
Yes, chicken wire is nothing to squirrels. Is the garden in a dedicated area?
It's in my backyard. Like, it takes up part of the very back edge, mm-hmm. and then around my patio.
You know, you don't want to put a garden where squirrels can jump from the trees or a fence to get at it. But it sounds like you're a good candidate for a motion-activated sprinkler. This is a device you set up to your hose, you turn your hose on full blast, you point it at the area you want to protect, and nothing happens till something breaks the infrared beam, and then it activates and throws cold water at the target. So it chases away squirrels, raccoons, deer, the neighbor's dog. And the nice thing about it is it's very effective. No creature ever gets used to it, and you don't have to keep buying replacement stuff over and over again.
Oh, that's actually brilliant. And then my second question is about my apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
So like my wife and I moved in, it's now about 2 years, and our first year in our home, like, the tree had fruit. And then last year, it had these spores, I guess you could say, on the leaves that were, like, the leaves turned yellow with, like, dark brown spots on them, and all the leaves fell off. And then I sprayed it with some neem oil because I'm trying to stay away from chemicals.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And for most of the season, I've had leaves, even though there haven't been, like, there hasn't been any fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all come back again now as, like, the I guess, the year has gone on, and I can see the spores coming back again. Is there anything else I can do for it?
Do you have junipers planted around the area, either juniper trees or low-growing junipers?
I do not think so, no.
Okay. But you live in a fairly congested area. Drexel Hill is a very populated suburb. It's likely somebody has junipers or cedar trees in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's possible.
I want you to go online and look at images of a disease called cedar apple rust. It sounds like that's what you have, and it's a weird symbiotic situation where these spores cross over between junipers or cedars. It's called cedar apple rust, but junipers are a member of the cedar family, and they're more prominent in our area. And it crosses from the tree to the juniper, from the tree to the juniper, and it can be very difficult to control. Now, are you aware of how much work it is just to keep an apple tree healthy without this problem, right?
Yes. Well, thing is, so I'm from South Africa originally, mm-hmm. and like problems like squirrels and the cedar apple rust are not things that I'm very used to.
Yeah, but at least we get rain here, you know.
That's true.
Here's the deal. I want you to go online. I want you to go to the show's website, youbetyourgarden.org. Click on where it says Garden Answers A to Z. That's been tremendously improved lately. In the search box, you want to look at fruit tree care and you want to look at cedar apple rust. And the fruit tree care section will tell you what you have to do about pruning the tree every year. And then after we get the disease under control, about thinning the fruits during the season. But the first thing I want you to do, first be prepared to prune the tree in late winter or early spring. And then I want you to be ready with a product called Surround, S-U-R-R-O-U-N-D. It's a clay spray, and it's really the only thing that would help you against cedar apple rust because it would physically prevent the spores from landing on the apple tree.
Okay.
And it's totally non-toxic.
Would I have to spray that after, like, rains and stuff like that?
Not so much. It depends on the season. When I had peach trees, I used to spray it 3 or 4 times a year. And it puts a sheen on the tree. The tree almost looks flocked like a Christmas tree. So you can tell when the white, when the gray seems, like, less prominent, it's probably time to spray again. The more you spray it, the better the quality the apples are going to be.
All right. No, that sounds great. I really, really appreciate your help.
All right. Good luck with your evil squirrels, especially.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. Bye.
All right. As promised, it is time for the question of the week. Getting the most out of your garlic. You Bet Your Garden producer, Brett Rader, please get us started with this week's stinky question.
Can do. Charlie in, quote, upstate New York, USDA Hardiness Zone 5 writes, I'm finished digging up this season's garlic harvest and have been reading your articles about making garlic powder from some of the cloves. I've been growing garlic for about 10 years now in the northeastern U.S., and as you suggest, I use any split or damaged bulbs right away to make garlic powder. But I do one thing different than you. I have found that it holds its flavor better if I slice the garlic, dehydrate it, store the dried slices in a jar until I need more seasoning, and then run some of the dried slices through my, yes, dedicated, coffee mill to powder it up. It takes up a little more space in the pantry, but the flavor is so much better. An improvement on a McGrath technique? Could it be?
It could. It was. It has been. And it am. Would it be? Anyway, in other words, I would be awarding Charlie a medal for meritorious service in the service of meritoriously servicing garlic, but I stumbled across this idea years ago on my own, inspired by coffee beans.
How so?
Well, I love really strong coffee, and I always buy whole beans so that I can grind them up fresh in the morning. One day it occurred to me that I was doing the opposite with my garlic. Grinding up all my extra cloves at one time and using the resulting powder over the following year, when grinding up my, quote, garlic beans fresh would taste much better.
And provide the ultimate show-off routine at a dinner party. Oh, and would you like some fresh ground garlic with that?
I like that, but I'd have to get me one of them 4-foot-high pepper grinders.
At any rate, 'Tis the season to work your garlic, so let's review harvesting and storage.
Okay, so you get fresh planting garlic from a catalog, farmer's market, friend, or your own garden, and plant the biggest cloves in the, quote, fall.
Which is actually around the end of August through early September, as early planting gives you bigger heads at harvest time, which is in July for most people.
Right, you harvest when the greenery on the bottom third of the plants is turned brown and the underground wrappers are nice and full. Then you cure your harvest by letting it all sit out in a dry spot with great air circulation for a week. Mine sits on a table on my porch under a ceiling fan, which is ideal. Then I look the bulbs over for damaged cloves and use any of them right away.
But you don't dry them.
No, I use these ones to make a big whole wheat pizza with tomato sauce, garlic, organic cheese, garlic, some spinach, garlic, some broccoli, garlic, roasted red peppers.
I know, and some more garlic. So what do you do with the rest of your harvest?
Well, I start then to break open the smallest heads and use those cloves for everyday cooking over the next month. Any big ones get set aside in a bowl to start up my replanting stock.
Right. Keep replanting your biggest cloves and you'll get even bigger cloves at harvest time. But because you grow hardneck garlic, you're racing the clock.
Yes. Softneck, or quote, white garlic, is the type most often found in the supermarket and grown in California. It can last a year in storage without sprouting and it braids well, but the flavor is inferior. The hardneck garlics, which have wonderful heirloom stories, fabulous flavors, and colorful wrappers, grow better in areas with cold winters, but they do start to sprout by Thanksgiving. Now, as we approach planting time, which is when the kids go back to school, you sort out all your remaining cloves. Big ones get replanted, smaller ones get processed.
Well, what if some of them already have that little green tip that shows they're sprouting?
They get planted. It doesn't hurt to plant sprouted garlic cloves. The rest of them get chopped up and the slices placed in a food dryer dehydrator to get all dried until they're brittle. Then in this brave new world of garlic powder, those dried chunks get placed into spice jars with some of those desiccating pouches, you know, the ones that come with running shoes and vitamins.
To absorb any last-minute moisture.
Snap out of it, landscape lad. We're almost finished.
Lad?
Or garden boy. Your choice. Anyway, when you need more powder, place some of the dried chunks into a dedicated coffee grinder. That is one that has never actually had any coffee in it to grind. Grind up a bunch. Place the resulting powder in a clean, dry spice jar with a shaker lid and more of those desiccating things to keep it dry.
You might say to keep your powder dry.
Well, that sure was a helpful look at how to handle your stinking rose harvest now, wasn't it? Luckily, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over at your leisure or leisure, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week, and you will always find the latest question of the week at the Gardens Alive website. Yikes, my producer is threatening to pre-grind my garlic if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location. Please, please, please. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org. where you'll find the answers to all those garden questions you were going to ask us, audio of this show, past shows, and our precious podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer this week is Diana Martinez. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and stay current with the show throughout the week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz give our website a clean, fresh scent. The heck with that, says our garlic-eating editor, Al Banks. Our former associate producer of Production Association and now full-fledged producer is Brett Rader. I'm garlic mad, Mike McGrath, and I'll be cloving, chopping, chunking, drying, and grinding until I can see you next week.